Hey, this is Jen Johans at FilmIntuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. Welcome to part two of our ongoing Watch with Jen tribute to the movies of LA. It's a love letter to the city of Los Angeles and a heartfelt ode to the people of the city who are very much in our thoughts right now following the devastating fires in early January. We hope that this episode filled with rich, fun, warm conversations celebrating the films of your fair city will bring you some joy and a little reprieve from everything going on. And if you're not in LA, hopefully we're bringing a little bit of that California spirit to you too. Thanks so much for being here in the early days of season 6 of the podcast. It's funny, I thought that we were going to hit episode 250 closer to summer. I had so much happen in the end of 2024. It was kind of an overwhelming fall and winter that I didn't really stop and do the math. When it came to how many episodes I have produced and released that you have listened to, and I found out, oh no, I am a lot closer to 250 than I thought I would be. So next week, you're getting the 250th episode of Watch with Jen. But for now, enjoy 249, and thanks so much for being here. Well, I'm thrilled to welcome back my good friend, William Boyle, the Brooklyn Bard, one of the people you've heard on the show a million times. I love talking to him. He is the author of such books as Gravesend, Shoot the Moonlight Out, City of Margins, and the brand new wonderful Saint of the Narrow Street. Bill, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks, Jen. It's good talking to you. And yeah, everything's going well. Just, you know, finished up some book stuff, and
yeah,
that's about it. Trying to get back to work on something new.
Okay. Well, congrats on the success and the launch of Saint of the Narrow Street. For those listening, I was honored to do a little interview, a virtual, with my buddy Patrick Milliken over at Poison Pen Bookstore with Bill. I will be sure to link to that in the box when this post goes up, so you can watch it on YouTube. If you look up the Poison Pen Bookstore, you can watch us chat with Bill. And we mentioned we were going to do this. Yes. And it was after the LA fires. We thought it'd be really good to do something to honor Los Angeles and film, basically, which is different than the real LA, you know, the dream world. And I asked my friends to think of a movie that they were passionate about. And it was before the death of David Lynch, actually, that we came up with Mulholland Drive. So I'd love to know, what is your relationship to this movie? And is it one of your favorite Lynches? Is it your favorite Lynch? And do you remember the first time you saw it?
Oh, man. Yeah, well, I love all of his movies. Well, you know, pretty much all of his movies. I'm like everybody else. I mean, I don't rewatch Dune that much, but everything else is pretty. I don't dislike Dune, actually.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to knock it. I just
don't
put it in the category with the other stuff. But yeah, I mean, I was exposed to Lynch early. I mean, I used to just have this video store in my neighborhood where I was just kind of renting videos all the time as a kid. And when I was 12, I think I rented Blue Velvet. And I probably mentioned this before, if not on the podcast, then in conversation. It was just kind of one of those things. Like, I watched that movie one Saturday afternoon when I was 12. And, you know, I went into it seeing the world one way, and I came out of it seeing the world just a whole different way. And it kind of, I mean, it, you know, it's a cliche to say it was a life changer, but it really was, like, you know, a life changer in terms of how I saw the world and how I saw art, I think, even though I wouldn't have been able to articulate that then. And that was probably right after Twin Peaks had aired, because I think Twin Peaks aired, you know, it was probably like the summer after Twin Peaks went off the air or something, that that I saw Blue Velvet for the first time. So I missed Twin Peaks during its original run, and then I saw Blue Velvet. I fell in love with Lynch. I saw Wild at Heart soon after that. Loved that movie. That introduced me to Barry Gifford's work. I saw Fire Walk with Me before I ever saw the original run of the TV show Twin
Oh,
Peaks.
wow. Okay.
And then I was, and then that was all like through, I guess, early junior high and early high school. And then I think freshman year of college maybe is when Lost Highway came out. And I remember going to see that on opening night in the city, in New York City. And then I guess The Straight Story I love. And then, and I obviously, I'm giving you a whole chronology, sorry, but during that time, I also went back and saw the early stuff, Eraserhead and The Elephant Man.
Yeah.
And I mean, I fell in love with Lynch, and he kind of became, I think, kind of my biggest artistic hero. And then by the time Mulholland Drive came out, I was pretty on board. I remember not loving Lost Highway as much as I thought I would when I
I
first
agree.
saw it in
Yeah.
97. It has grown on me a lot. I love it more and more and more every time I watch it. But when I first saw it, I was not as into it as it. But I was, I was also like, it was a weird time for me with movies, from, like 18 to 21. A lot
Yeah.
of stuff that I didn't like at the time or was mixed on, I wound up loving years later, and kind of think of some of my favorite movies as movies from that period, like 97 to 99, that I really didn't respond to the first time for some reason, like Bringing Out the Dead or Eyes Wide Shut or even Magnolia, like stuff that I just didn't connect with that first viewing. And I kind of group Lost Highway in with that, but I love Lost Highway now. And so Mulholland Drive came out in 2001, and my then girlfriend, now wife, and I had just moved to Austin, Texas. We had some friends down there, and we kind of went down there on a whim. We'd only been together for a few months at that point, and I don't remember exactly when we saw it. It must have been soon after we got there, because I think it came out in October of 2001 or
Okay.
November of 2001. But we saw Mulholland Drive at a midnight showing at the Dolby Theater in Austin, which was right up the street from our house. And it was just actually probably, if not the most memorable movie going experience of my life, certainly one of
Wow.
the most memorable. And, in large part because I loved the movie so much. I loved it immediately. And, but also because the experience itself was kind of,
Yeah.
Lynchian. It was, we were in this theater that had it had like a weird private room. I haven't been there in so long and don't remember. Maybe it's not still there, but the Dolby had this, this private room in the back of the theater, kind of with a love seat and kind of a window, and you could sit in this room and watch the movie. And we did that, and we sat in this room, and there were, if I remember correctly, there were kind of saloon doors into the room, and somebody wearing cowboy boots stood outside that door for the entire run of the movie and just stood there. And that was before, obviously, we got to the cowboy part in
That
Mulholland
would
Drive.
have made it scarier.
It
Yeah.
was scary. I mean, and I think that was one thing I responded to immediately about Mulholland Drive too. I don't think at that point I thought of David Lynch as kind of, the director of some of my favorite horror films. But really, I think, it was with Mulholland Drive, I started to realize, and then in retrospect with Fire Walk With Me and Lost Highway, like, oh, this guy makes things that actually terrify me more than any quote unquote horror movie ever has or ever will. And like, the Winkies scene in Mulholland Drive, I still think of as probably the scariest, or certainly one of the scariest scenes in any movie ever. So yeah, it was a really memorable experience. And I also remember going home. We got home, whatever, it's a 2.5 hour movie, and it was a midnight screening, so we got home at probably 3 in the morning or something. And I had my first, it was late 2001. This is, maybe this is late for this, but I had my first computer at that time, a laptop. I'd never had one. I always wrote on typewriters
Oh, wow,
until
cool.
then. And we had like dial-up internet, and I remember getting home and just like I don't remember what searching on the internet was like really in 2001, but I remember just trying to read anything I could about Mulholland Drive and people's reactions to it and responses to it and reviews, whatever I could find. And I mean,
I
it's a movie.
remember Slate had a really good
Yeah.
analysis of it around that time because I think I did the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's definitely I'd be hard pressed to rank his movies, and then you get into the kind of tricky territory of whether or not Twin Peaks: The Return counts as a movie or
Yeah.
not. But I mean, I would probably say it's my favorite. And I would definitely list it as my favorite movie of this century so far. If I wasn't listing, Twin Pe I think I would put Twin Peaks: The Return kind of at the top of everything if people were talking about it as a film, or whatever, as a TV show. I just kind of think about it as just a piece of art, I guess, more than
Yeah.
anything else. And I kind of put that at the top lately, so it had such an impact on me. But Mulholland Drive is just remain, I've never really stopped going back to it. I've never really stopped thinking about it and just kind of feeling swallowed up by the mystery of it. And yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, I think it is his best film. It is all of his obsessions in one movie. It's kind of like, I mean, he loves Vertigo, but it is sort of like his Vertigo. It's almost
Yeah.
like we're watching it through both Judy and Madeline's eyes. So I love that. I love the duality. It's dizzyingly romantic. It's surreal, but it's surreal in a way that I think works the best in this.
Yeah.
Sometimes, some of his stuff can be a little like a bridge too far in places for me. I would say this is my favorite. And then I kind of go back and forth. I mean, Twin Peaks is its own thing. That's probably,
Yeah.
head and shoulders. I count all of the Twin Peaks parts like as one essentially. But then I would probably put Straight Story and Elephant Man together because I kind of
Yeah,
consider
I love
those as
both of
two
those.
halves as
Yeah.
well. I love that I think the two greatest things he did in his career, Twin Peaks aside, were like back to back. It was Straight Story and Mulholland Drive. So this is kind of him at the top of his game. I saw it too, actually, when I moved to the Southwest. I moved to Arizona in the spring of 2001 from Minneapolis. And I remember I finally lived by a video store that had everything really close to me, like 5 minutes away. And I do remember watching this in just like a daze at night thinking, oh, I'll just watch part of it, or it's
Yeah.
long. And I needed to sit and watch the entire thing. And it was just incredible. So I do remember watching it late at night too. I wish I would have seen it in the theater for the first time. That sounded like the best experience. I can't imagine watching it with somebody in the cowboy boots. And that's like, it's great because, I mean, he might have been standing up because he had hip surgery. We don't know,
Yeah.
but I love that it just sort of the mystique of why he's standing there and he's standing there. I think the cowboy in this movie is fascinating. Do you agree? Are you just saying that to agree with me, or are you just? I love that whole
Yeah,
scene.
that seems incredible.
Yeah, the acting is fabulous. This is a film, every time I watch it, I like zero in on something new.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the way I feel about it. And it's just one of those movies. There are those movies for me that I just don't stop thinking about and don't stop kind of, getting hung up on images or moments or mysteries, and Mulholland Drive is definitely, a big one for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think it is about the Naomi Watts character and LA and his use of LA on screen here?
Oh man, it's so, I obviously I grew up in New York, but I probably, I think I've said this before, but I probably wound up, in my life reading and watching a lot more about LA ultimately, just because, my love of film noir, my love of crime fiction, a lot of that stuff is rooted in LA and, less so, I guess, in New York, to a certain extent. And, a lot of my favorite writers are LA writers and, so, that's definitely something I responded to about the film. Like, I think Betty Naomi Watts's character calls it, this dream place early in the movie. And that's just, that's the way he films it, really. And that's what it is. And it really captures that, those early scenes of her arriving, that moment when she comes onto the studio lot to do the
Oh my
audition.
gosh, I
Just,
know.
just that's that feeling. But as always with Lynch, and this is what I felt when I saw Blue Velvet at 12 years old, is like, there's the darkness under the surface, there's the kind of idyllic, dreamy, top layer, and then this, like, bug infested evil underneath. And you really feel that in Mulholland Drive too. I mean, just, in various ways, and in ways that are, mystifying and strange. And I just watched the pilot for the first time, which I'd never, after he died, I rewatched it right after he died. It was the first movie of his I watched right after he died, which I guess, indicates something, that it was the first one I wanted to rewatch. And then right after I rewatched the movie, I found the pilot on archive.org or somewhere, and I'd never seen it. I just, I was interested in seeing, because I'd always heard about, how he, what
Robert
he added.
Forster's in it, right? Like some of
Yeah.
those scenes were.
Well, I mean, I think there's only one other Robert Forster scene, but it's like obvious that he was going to be an ongoing character. Like, that there are those threads that exist in the movie of, like, that the one guy who steals the black book and shoots the three people in that office. Like, that, they're the threads for these other characters. But it's pretty much all the same, except for all the stuff he added in. Like, the Winkies scene isn't in it. Some of the, like, the scenes that bring it together, bring the film together, aren't in it. But largely, it's the same from, like, the beginning of the film to when they find Diane Selwyn in her apartment dead. So it's pretty much that, except for, I think there's one or two additional scenes that are not in the movie, and then there's all the stuff from the movie that's not in that pilot. But it was really fascinating to watch, and really I was just blown away by how masterfully he transformed it into a film. I mean, that must be such a, incredibly difficult thing to do, because it's long. It was an hour and 20 minutes or an hour and a half, and, or maybe even a little longer than that. And just to kind of find the places where he could add things in and build it and make it work as a feature. I mean, he kind of did that with the Twin Peaks pilot too, with the European version of the Twin Peaks pilot. But Mulholland Drive is even, it's more kind of wondrous to behold, like, that how that happened.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Club Silencio, was that in the pilot?
No, I think
No,
that's
okay.
all. Yeah, it cuts. I mean, the pilot ends right before
Right when
that.
they find, yeah, I was going to say Diane Selwyn. Okay.
Yeah,
That
it's
is
like,
really
I mean, that
interesting.
I think the, right after that is like their first
The
love
love scene.
scene, and then the Silencio scene, and that's kind of where it takes off. And I'm trying to remember. I think, like, the Winky scene definitely is in it. I can't remember if the cowboy scene. I think the cowboy scene is in the pilot. But yeah, I watched it like a month and change ago now, and got a bad memory.
Well, that's okay.
But yeah, it's fascinating. Still, it's fascinating document to kind of
compare and yeah.
compare. And it's also, it was also, I gotta say, it was cool to watch it like on archive.org as a, somebody put it up there just as like a VHS rip. So you're kind of watching it like it would have looked on television in 1999 or
That's
whatever it was,
nice. Yeah.
whenever it was originally supposed to be on.
That's cool.
Yeah, and that was interesting. But yeah, I mean, getting back to the LA part of it, I mean, I think, you know, it's just yeah, that kind of vision of LA that he has, and it, you know, is almost, I guess, certainly this is kind of the apex of that for him, is just so, you know, so rooted in cinema and just that kind of ongoing version of LA that he's kind of interacting with, and also just his kind of take on it. I was in LA for the first time and only time I've ever been there in 2020, right before COVID, and I went to stay with my friend, this writer director George Griffith, who we've gotten to be friends because he wanted to adapt something of mine. That didn't work out. We worked on a different thing together. That didn't work out. But he brought me out there to work on something else that also, you know, nothing happened with. But George, you know, between getting to know him in 2014 or so and that visit in 2020, had landed a role on Twin Peaks: The Return and worked with Lynch. And so it was like, you know, that trip, I was only out there for about 4 or 5 days, but George made it very David Lynch centric, and it was pretty special and really, like, you know, we were just,
Did you
you
go
know,
to
he had,
Bob's Big Boy?
yeah, we went to Bob's Big Boy. I think that was the first night we went, and then we, you know, he had a party and had, like, you know, several people who were in Twin Peaks: The Return over, which was surreal. And also just, you know, even just driving with him on Mulholland, we were driving on Mulholland Drive, listening to, like, you know, Angelo Badalamenti's scores. And it was just a surreal, beautiful way to experience LA. And really, you know, probably in a lot of ways, despite all the LA literature and LA films that I love, like, I think that's probably, you know, Lynch is probably kind of my greatest touchstone for LA.
That's cool. Yeah, it's interesting because I remember I've been there like about six times in the last
Yeah.
couple of years. I loved going so much. And I remember talking to some people that were like, "Oh, why do you like LA? There's old next to new and it's grungy and like
Yeah.
and that's what I love about it. I live in Phoenix, which is the same thing. You have like really old buildings next to something brand new and you know, it's like any
Yeah.
big city, but so it kind of reminded me of Phoenix a little bit, although it's far more beautiful, of course, the mountains. There is nothing like seeing the lights at night. The first trip I went out for was August of 2022, and our friend Priscilla Page picked me up on a Saturday night, and we went driving around talking the whole time. It was the first time I actually met her, and we drove for like 3 hours, kind of around and around and around, and just seeing, you know, the lights. And but it was so funny because we were getting so distracted telling stories that like 5 seconds after we like left the city, all of a sudden, oh, that was Beverly Hills. Oh, that was
Yeah.
this. Oh, that was that. And that was really kind of funny. But you know, and going back and seeing the beauty and also some of the you know, the darkness of LA, like getting one Uber driver was going to drop me off in an alley when I was meeting someone. I'm like, no, I'm not getting out in an alley. So I love that the Winky scene in particular is fascinating to me because there's nothing like I enjoy going to diners all the time. I remember growing up watching movies and we would go somewhere and tell stories and talk about the movie we saw. But writers telling a story or creative people, because you get so invested in their story. And so I love how invested we're getting listening to this about just something being there and then how it affects the Winky scene is just one of the most terrifying things in film, I think. Oh
Oh
my God.
yeah, it is 100%. I mean, I one of those scenes that had had that impact on me the first time and has it
Yeah.
on me every single time I
Yes.
watch it. It's
Oh my God.
unbelievable. Like the tension in that scene leading up to the dumpster reveal. It's incredible. And it's just where it's placed in the film, especially, considering that it's not in the pilot, is so interesting. And
Yeah, I always thought it took place later in the movie, but it does. So every time I watch that takes me aback for a minute. The other thing I love
It's so
about,
early in the film. It's what, 20 minutes in? I can't remember off the top
it's
of my head, but it's
yeah, one
early.
of the first big sequences. Yeah. And another thing that always blows me away as a writer and just as a film lover is how much different things pay off later. Like a line of dialogue, this is the girl. Or, this isn't where we stop, that kind of goes back, or the just a key and the key unlocking. Of course, there's Freudian imagery and things like that. But the way that things pay off later is fascinating to me. Watching it this time, it's kind of getting amused because after you've seen it enough times, you realize, okay, the last chunk of the movie, we realize, okay, Naomi Watts is Diane in this segment of the film. And, she's got the stringy hair and she's heartbroken and all this horrible stuff has happened. But it kind of made me think, like, in a weird way, she had all these creative ambitions and these dreams. And it reminded me of the thing where, as a writer, you're in your jammies or you're in your robe and you're like, not fully beautiful, but you're creating this beautiful thing. And so I was thinking, like, okay, the creator and what they create, and so what she has wrought, and then how it comes back on her. It's fascinating. I think this is a movie I'll never get tired of watching, I think.
Yeah, no, same for me. And yeah, I just I think, some people have like this impulse to wanna solve it or
Yeah,
something.
exactly.
And I just don't understand that, 'cause part of the beauty of his work in general, and this movie in particular, is like that. It's like, just getting lost in the dream of it. There are things he pulls together in a really beautiful way, but there are also things that are, there's a great mystery to it, and that,
Yeah.
just accepting that mystery is kind of the joy of it.
Yeah, because you do. I mean, there's so many, this is exactly what happens, and this is how this pays off completely. YouTube explainer videos and all of that, and that's kind of insane. It reminds me of seeing an interview with Joe Pantoliano about Memento, and he's like, what's funny is everyone all of a sudden believes what my character, who's lied to you in every other scene, says just because it's at the end of the movie. And just because he's saying something, they're like, oh, that's what it is. Why are you suddenly believing it? So that's always kind of, that was a movie that came out actually maybe around 2001, around this time, 2000, 2001. Two films that we don't know that we're ever going to solve. They're not supposed to be solved. Just getting lost in these dreams. Yeah.
And it is, again, it's I mean, with Mulholland Drive, there's that added layer of like it was intended to be a show,
Yeah.
and you can feel that in the when you watch that pilot, like where some of these threads were going to go, and that it was going to be built a little bit more, like a Twin Peaks, but that just the way he kind of reshapes that into this new thing is astounding.
Yeah, I have so many questions about some of the characters in this movie. Like the little old people that
Oh,
show
they're the
up at the
best.
airport with the smile scene where they're smiling really insane in the car, just kind of will haunt your dreams. Yeah, so there's so much going on in this one that I think is fabulous. It's also a film out of time, which is something we love about Lynch. Some of it feels like it's 1950s, and then some of it's very modern. Yeah, so this is, him at the height of his powers for sure. What did you think of any of the other Lynches that were of this era or the setting, Inland Empire, anything else you want to talk about before we go?
Oh man, I love Inland Empire. I saw that the day it opened. I was back in New York at that time and saw that, I guess, at the IFC Center, and that was another. It wasn't as profound an experience for me watching it the first time as Mulholland Drive, but I think I came to like Inland Empire more, like the second and third time I watched it. And it's probably the one I mean, I think I've only watched it 3 times. So probably the one I've watched, I guess, the least. But I really love that film, and I think it treads a lot of the same territory, obviously. Lost Highway, as I said, which I think, I mean, there's a, I don't, I think probably people talk about those as some sort of trilogy, right? Lost Highway, Mulholland Drive, or, I mean, at least his kind of LA trilogy, right? That would be it for the most part. And as I said, with Lost Highway, like I struggled with that one a little when I first saw it, and have come to really love it more and more with each viewing. And that's a film I've returned to a lot, especially in recent years. And Fire Walk With Me, which I mentioned earlier, is another one that I struggled with a little bit. I mean, I saw that before I ever saw the show, which probably explains why I struggled with it when I was 13 or 14 years old. But I liked it then. But I've really like that's become, if I had to kind of choose a Lynch favorite, it'd probably be Mulholland Drive or Fire Walk With Me. They'd be kind of neck and neck. And The Return, as I said, I think The Return is like the greatest piece of American art of the 21st century. So, I mean, that's not hyperbole. I really feel that way. I think that it sums up everything that he's always doing, and it has echoes of all of his films and his as well as his paintings, and it's just a really incredible work. And I think that's something I'm going to be returning to again and again. I've watched it all the way through, I guess, a few times now. But yeah, he's really, I count him as my artistic hero, and I think Mulholland Drive is definitely, seems like it's interesting. Like I don't think I could have anticipated that it would be received the way it's been received. At the time when it came out, I was even surprised, because he'd had a rough streak there for a while where like people didn't like Fire Walk With Me, people did not like Lost Highway
They were
largely.
baffled by Straight Story, or else they didn't see it, which was a bummer.
Straight Story definitely, I think, flew under the radar. And so when this came out and people loved it, and then the kind of reputation it's had since as like the best film of the century, or one of the best films of the century, is pretty incredible that it's connected with audiences in that way. But it really speaks to just what a special artist he is, and what a profound loss. I mean, it really is. It was. I know he was kind of in rough shape at the end and couldn't leave his house, but it felt good knowing he was there, and that he might get something else out. Because The Return really, during a tough time, The Return really felt like such a huge gift. And I was hoping for, something else coming down the road, but glad we have all of these films and shows to go back to.
Very much. Well, Bill, I want to thank you so much for doing this and for talking to me about Mulholland Drive and David Lynch and
Yeah, thanks.
LA, of course.
Oh, of course. Thanks for having me, Jen. It's great talking to you.
Next up, we have my friend Courtney Howard. Courtney is a film critic and entertainment journalist whose work has been published at Variety, the AV Club, and Fresh Fiction TV. She's a member of the Los Angeles Film Critics Association, or LAFCA, and the Critics' Choice Association, CCA, as well as a Rotten Tomatometer approved film critic. Born and raised in Northern California, she has had a love of Hollywood ever since seeing her first film in theaters at age 6, E.T. the Extraterrestrial. She now resides in Southern California with her screenwriter husband and perfect little dachshund. Well, Courtney, I am so glad to have you here to talk about LA movies because you're one of my favorite LA friends. I love hanging out with you, going to lunch, going to the movies when I'm in town. And I mean, we saw To Live and Die in LA when we were in LA. Hello. The first time we hung out, actually, we went to the movies. So yeah, because, we wandered around and had like a typical LA thing with like shop names that were kind of puns and cutesy. And so we still have jokes about that. I took too many pictures of trees. It was like an LA hang. So
In your
Courtney.
defense, the trees were they were decorated with
Yes.
chandeliers hanging from them. I don't know what that was about, but
It was
it could have been a
beautiful.
Santa Monica thing. But
Yeah.
yes, so in fairness, those trees did look very pretty.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm a little tree nuts, but at least, in my defense, those are some gorgeous trees. So yes. Courtney, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. Like, I still feel, I know this podcast is very Los Angeles centric now, like for this topic, and
Yes.
I still feel like it's still always a realization to me that I've spent more time living in the Los Angeles area than I did in my hometown, which I still feel like I'm born and raised Northern Californian and from Danville. But now that I've lived in Los Angeles more, I feel like a Los Angelino, like an Angelino,
Yeah.
like a true Angelino. Even though there's pockets here, I still have not been to.
I know it's kind of a similar thing. I grew up in Minneapolis, but I've lived in Phoenix more than half my life now. But if you ask me where I'm from, I'm like, oh, Minneapolis. Yeah, it's just one of those things. And you're like, oh, wait, I have lived here for more than half of my life. Yes.
And I still love meeting people who are like originally from here, who like
Yeah.
to Beverly Hills High School or went to like, Burbank High School and like those kinds of people. Like that to me is still like a find.
Exactly. When did you move out there?
I moved here in 97,
Okay.
September 97. So I've been here a while. I was not here for the Northridge quake, which everybody seems to mark time by around here. So I was not here for that, but we did have our share of big earthquakes in Northern California. I was
Yeah.
Loma Prieta, so in 89.
I
So
remember that, like, just as a kid, seeing it on TV. Yeah.
I wasn't here for Northridge, but and hopefully I won't be here for, I don't want any other big quakes now that I'm a homeowner.
No, no more natural disasters, no more
No.
anything like that. We are done. Yes.
None. But it's,
2025 has 2025'd enough. Yeah.
yeah. But it's so funny to have the two movies we're going to talk about, to have watched these growing up or in my formative like film watching years in Northern California, and sort of keeping track of like the locations and where everything is, and then coming down here and like driving by them or driving on them or through them or visiting them or what have you. It's weird. Like it's surreal. It's surreal.
Yeah, I love the movies that you suggested when I was asking my friends, which movies you want to talk about. One of the ones Courtney brought up first was Clueless, which we just covered like a few months earlier, in our Paul Rudd episode. But I know when I'm talking to Courtney, we're going to have fun no matter what we talk about. And I was thrilled that she brought up Troop Beverly Hills, which is, like a staple. If you grew up in the 80s or 90s, you watched that movie a bunch. And of course, Speed, which I saw in the movie theater, I don't even know, like 5 times? I can't even remember. Yeah. So I was excited. I've seen Speed a million times in my life, but Troop Beverly Hills, it had been decades. I would
Oh.
say, yeah, since I had seen that, everybody's in that movie, Courtney. Oh my
Yeah.
God. Yeah.
Yeah. I usually wind up watching it like once a year by choice,
Yeah, for fun.
For fun. I love it. I've always loved it. I've always been obsessed with Shelley Long in that movie. She is such a hoot, and
Yeah.
I think she is such a, like, she got her flowers for the time for being such a great comedic actress, but I think she's in subsequent years had been like sort of undervalued and underheralded, but she had such a wonderful like streak in the 80s of just being hilarious, and she never lost that. Like she's still working. She's still like she was on Modern Family for a couple episodes and just
Yeah.
hilarious on that. But during her streak, like this was one of my favorites, like my absolute like go-to favorite. Like I'll watch this whenever I can. Phyllis Neffler is an icon and a legend.
She's a precursor to like Elle Woods. I mean, you know, yeah. And it's kind of cool. When I was watching it this time, I was thinking, you know, she was overshadowed, I think, by some of the other actresses of her day. If you're unfamiliar with Shelley Long, if you love like Goldie Hawn, kind of that energy, or like the Reese Witherspoon energy of the next generation. But my goodness, I mean, I remember watching her on Cheers as a kid, and then all of these movies like Outrageous Fortune, Hello Again, they were all coming out around this time. Yeah.
Money Pit,
Yes, Money Pit.
and it's so funny, like thinking of the people who have left their huge like TV shows to go on to, you know, to do movies who haven't been successful. Like she
Yeah.
really like hit it out of the park right away. And I think people had a little bit, if I can remember back that far, like it seemed like people had a little bit of trepidation of like, is she gonna make it? Is she not? Like she really like held her own as a leading lady for, you know, quite some time. And she's great. Like I love Hello Again. Like so funny. Outrageous Fortune. She's fantastic.
Yeah. And she is just so great in this because, you know, she's playing a troop mom. And oh, we should probably say some of the people who are in this, like Jenny Lewis as a kid, Carla Gugino. I mean,
Kelly Martin was
Kelly Martin, yes.
huge
Which
too.
Life Goes On, I remember as a girl. Oh my gosh.
Totally. Yeah,
Yeah. We're
and there's
like
so
aging ourselves, but it's okay.
it's okay. It's okay.
Yes.
We're women who have lived. We've
Yes.
but you know, these women have all gone on to like big, huge things. Like,
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many people in this movie. Like Willie Garson is also in this movie
Oh
too.
my gosh,
On
yes.
one of the rewatches I had done, I was like, I completely forgot he was in this movie.
Yes. Stanford. Yeah.
There's so
Craig
many.
T. Nelson, who was in Coach around this time. Yep.
There's a lot of like 80s specific like cameos too. Like, I mean, he's still living, but Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's in it,
Yes.
like Pia Zadora, Robin Leach.
Yep.
Oh my God, there's just a cameo, like a parade of Cheech Marin,
Yep.
Ted McGinley. Just so many people in this movie, and that they'll all just pop in for a quick, like, little thing. And Betty Thomas is in this, and like, I have two regrets in my life, like, two, like, really small regrets of like, I had sat next to Betty Thomas during a movie, and I was like, so sort of starstruck at like, I mean, she's a fantastic director,
Oh,
like,
yeah.
no joke, and she's hilarious too. But like, I regret not saying, I don't know how you feel about that movie, but I really loved you in True Beverly Hills. I really love that movie. It's such a, you know, fundamental film for me, and I just love it so much. Like, I regret not saying, like, not gushing, but also I wanted to be like cool and professional and stuff.
Yeah, cool
And
LA.
then another was doing a
You
round
might
table.
hear by now, like this will come out enough. Somebody tell somebody, tell Betty Thomas is what I'm saying. Yes.
Yes. And the
Oh,
other was like Carla Gugino. Like,
yeah.
I like my brain was so like altered that I was like, because she's like such a gorgeous woman, she's so
I
talented,
love her.
and
Yeah.
like she's so great in everything. And I'm so hardwired to just talk about the project that they're there for instead of thinking back more and doing a more comprehensive thing. And so it never occurred to me during this roundtable interview for a movie called The Space Between, like asking her like True Beverly Hills. Like, you're so great in that. Like, you have a tiny little part, but it's so like it's really like such a sweet moment for Phyllis Neffler to like be a nurturer and like
Yeah.
support the girls kind of a thing. And like, you're really vulnerable. Like, I really like regret not saying anything.
She seems really cool. Like, I remember on Twitter, she shared a piece I wrote about Elizabeth Harvest. Yeah, and was like, I love your intuition. So she had to do a pun on my film intuition, which was sweet. But yeah, she seems cool. So what we're saying is, if you know these women, let them know. Courtney, huge true
Big fan.
Beverly Hills fan, and I enjoy the hell out of it. Yes.
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 But it's so funny too, like I was saying with like driving around and like I've been going to screenings like a certain way. Like I have my
Oh, yeah.
like way to go to screenings. And I had been driving by two of the locations in this movie, the scene where they have the first Wilderness Girls meeting in the park where they eat caviar and like Phyllis just does not know what she's doing and she has to ask them like, shouldn't you have outfits or uniforms? And they're like, nobody's ever stuck around for that long. That little park is, I pass that all the time. That's on Coldwater Canyon. And it's still a park and like, it's still recognizable. Like you could still point that out as a location. Like the town has not changed.
Oh,
Like
wow.
it has not had that much of a facelift since like Beverly Hills and facelifts, but like it has not changed that much where you can't recognize where they are. And it always like makes me like sort of like miff that Kelly Martin's like dad in the movie like drops her off. She says a block, but it's like generous three blocks away and it shows her getting out on a sidewalk. And then it turns into like in real life, not a sidewalk where she's got to walk to that park. And I'm like, that is not safe, dad. Like, what are you doing? Like, it literally like sidetracks me every time.
Like in Clueless, everywhere takes 20 minutes. It does not.
It's
No.
not.
Yeah.
No, that is the biggest lie told on film. And then Phyllis Neffler's, the Neffler Mansion is still in existence. It's not painted the same color as in the movie, but it's still there and it has not changed at all on the outside.
Wow.
The interiors were all on a soundstage, filmed on a soundstage with a working kitchen, like a real working, like
Oh
why
my goodness.
a working kitchen? It's bizarre. Real working kitchen and then the pool, it has like little designs on it and stuff. That's David Hockney designs on the pool.
Wow.
So like I mean, they went like crazy with the interiors
Yeah, I
on like
wonder how much the budget was on this. We need to do like
don't know.
an oral history variety. Somebody give you a call, oral history time for sure.
I would gladly write up a oral history on this movie or like hold Q&As, like special, like I will talk anybody's ear off about this movie. So
Yeah,
thank you for
let's
coming to my TED.
get American Cinematheque on the phone and be like, you know what?
I did host a screening, but like it wasn't a like anybody
Oh.
after or anything. It was just me, doing the programming for one show. And that was
That's
fun. That was a
awesome.
fun screening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Showed it on 35, which was really fun. I'd never seen it on 35 before. It was only, I think I'd only watched it on VHS and maybe it was starting to be digital around that time. I can't remember. So yeah. So that was fun.
Did you
Yeah.
have a lot of people who had never seen it?
Yeah.
Oh,
Surprising.
that's so cool.
Yeah. I always ask like whenever I'm like
Yeah,
doing
me
a
too.
show to a movie, like who's
Who's
seen
seen
it,
it? Yeah.
who's not. And like a surprising amount, like half of the people hadn't. And so I sort of had to like, I have my intro speech that I usually do, like all typed out. So I had to like little refines here and there. But yeah, it's really interesting. Like the whole genesis of this project is interesting. And then the legacy it sort of has left, like it all started with the producer, Eva Ostern Fries, like her life as a single Beverly Hills mom, divorced, estranged from her husband. And she had done stuff with her, I think it was eldest daughter. And she was like a brownie mom for her daughter. And sort of, she was like, her boss had said, you got to write these stories down, like all these stories that you're telling. And so she wrote them down and he's like, you got to refine these, refine these. And so she finally did. They found screenwriters to sort of write the story. And so she said some of it is embellished and then most of it sort of stayed how it really was, how her stories really were. And she's a redhead and has like an impeccable, like eccentric style, like those people are dead. So like Shelley
Oh, I love that.
Long like modeled some of those like crazy outfits, like the over the top kind of stuff on her, but you know, she really took it on. Shelley really took it on as a life and made it a life of her own. But yeah, and so the like in later screenings, I also noticed that the Neffler Mansion is so close by to the Beverly Hills Hotel. So when they go camping in the hills and they can't, starts raining, they can't rough it. So they go to the Beverly Hills Hotel. That always strikes me as so like outrageous. Like that's the most
They could
outrageous
just go to your house,
place. Go to that house. Like literally it's 3 blocks away.
yeah.
So like geography, but you have to be like an Angelino to have like picked up on that. So
Yeah, that's amazing. I was so glad to watch it again. Like I said, it was just as much fun as it was as a kid. And I got obviously a lot more out of it now because I understood all the jokes and everything. So I watched it. It's one of those things where as a girl, you know, you do all the lines from the movie and then later, oh, that's what that means. So yeah, I adore that movie. And Speed, I've seen 2,000 times. Speed is one of those films where no matter how many times I see it. Certain like moments are touchstones for me, and I get excited. I think it's one of Dennis Hopper's best performances, even though like, you know, it's lame to say because he was in so much stuff, but I did a Dennis Hopper series on the podcast and everybody was giving a shout out to Speed. It's an amazing movie. Do you remember the first time you saw this? Did you watch it in the theater a bunch too?
Yes. So I saw it like that was my most that was my record for most times I'd seen a film in a theater up till Barbie came out, and then that sort of usurped all that. But I saw it 7 times in the theater. My best friend saw it 11 times. We're
Wow.
the best, like we were both really loved the movie, but we both also thought Keanu Reeves was super hot.
Oh, everybody had a crush on
Oh my
Keanu. Yeah.
God. Everybody, men, women, everybody.
Yeah, guys wanted to be him. You know, everybody wanted. Yeah.
So, like, but it was also
And Sandra Bullock was the most beautiful. I mean, just what
she
a
was,
beautiful
yeah,
cast.
this
Yeah.
was like her breakthrough, and she's so
Yeah.
pretty, and like she's a delight in this movie, and like she really is a standout.
Yeah.
And in what could have been a thankless role, she really makes it her own. And
She's kind of the spark or the life because if it was just him on the bus and like with a new problem every 5 seconds, you need that sort of zest for life and the little twinkle in her eye and gum on my seat, and you need all that. Also, all the passengers are so great, like
Oh my
Rock and
God.
all of
Yeah,
them.
it was
Yeah.
really like I just saw it again for I don't know the 100th time because I'd watched it a bunch of course at home. Again on the big screen at the Egyptian Theater when they did the big screen Speed reunion.
Oh yeah, Priscilla was there for that. I think,
Yeah,
yeah.
so for the for Chris Tapley's like podcast thing. And it
Gotcha.
was so like my soul levitated, like it was crazy. But I had just like noticed that everybody on the bus is so representative of Los Angeles itself. So it's such a mixture of cultures all on that bus. Like
Yeah.
you have Latinos, you have, you know, old,
Tourists, you've got, yeah.
Asian, like everybody is so different. Tourists, like
Yeah.
Alan
It's already
Brockovich.
seen the airport. Yeah.
Yes. You know, you have everybody there represented, and it's such a great, like, and they don't make a big deal about the diversity on
No,
like
'cause
it's
that's
just
just what it's like.
that is what it's like. That is what it's like riding a bus in LA.
Yeah.
And it's actually like really geographically like correct the way they go to all these locations and how they hit all of them. Because some of these like LA movies, you watch them and be like, like at
That
least I
city isn't
do.
the right place.
They're like,
Yeah.
how did you get from downtown to Santa Monica in like 10 minutes? Like, under no circumstances would that ever happen. Not even in the pandemic when everything was shut down, could you get there in that amount of time? So, like, you know, you pick up on those little things, but this feels like geographically correct, even at the end where they have to like, they go from LAX to downtown again. It feels like I think they could do that since the 105 wasn't in full swing yet, because they filmed a lot on a freeway that hadn't been in use yet. Like, it was still being built. So the 105 freeway, which is pretty huge. Don't get me started. I'll tell you about all the California. So that was, so that's what I really picked up on this time seeing it again.
What a perfect screenplay, too. The way it sets everything up with that, you always forget about the elevator thing. Everybody, oh, it's just the, no. I mean, it sets up all of the conflict that's gonna come. The one-liners that come back, just his character listening to his boss or not, following his intuition. Like, it's just such a good screenplay, I think. And I know, like, you've heard Joss Whedon takes credit for a lot of the jokes in the movie, and there's been like arguments over who wrote what. I don't care. Whoever wrote the script, whatever it is, it's great. I love the cast. I get so upset every time Jeff Daniels is in the damn house, and oh my God, the
Oh my
face.
God.
How did I not notice until this screening, by the way, that Josh Charles is in that movie? I don't know why it just like clicked this time. I'm like, oh my God.
I mean, it's one of those things, like, that's the magic of movies, where you can
You're
something
like,
like
oh,
a
his hair
friend, and
isn't
then, like,
normally that color or whatever.
it's crazy. And that location at the beginning, that was the building where Jamie Foxx drops off Jada Pinkett Smith in
Ooh,
Collateral.
collateral.
And
I'm
then that,
loving the LA, affections here.
and that same street was where they did the Heat shootout
Okay.
in Heat. And there's, like,
Wow.
near the library over there, it's Fifth Street downtown, which I used to work, at the library towers there. And so it's a really, like, big location for a lot of, like, shoots. So it's fun to see, like, places like, oh, that's Fifth and Grand, or, oh, that's, like, Rose and Main. Like, I think that coffee shop that Keanu Reeves goes to still exists. It's been a while since I've been to Venice, but
Okay.
I had visited there when it, during my speed, like, craze. A friend of mine and I, we drove from Santa Barbara to Santa Monica, and, like, sort of like, let's go visit those locations. And
Oh,
so,
that's amazing.
like, I found the, like, at the time they had the phone booth right there.
I think you showed me that photo.
So I did all that, like, but it was fun. It was, like, fun.
When I
And
find you,
I think someone was telling me that somebody famous, like a famous director, I want to say James Cameron or somebody can correct this, but somebody had, a director had a office, like, right across the street from that coffee shop, like, in real life. And, like, they saw that stuff being filmed and stuff. And I was like,
I
holy shit.
remember hearing that, and I can't tell you who it was either, but James Cameron does sound right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was James Cameron. Like,
Yeah.
his office there was there at one point. But yeah, so, but it's a great movie. It's lots of fun. It's really well structured, so tight. There's
The
not a dull,
chemistry is fabulous,
not a dull moment. There's
No.
all these little things that you notice. Like, it took me probably, like, until maybe a couple years ago, when after, like, Jack Trapp, like, he starts having the breakdown of, like, oh my God, God damn it, and start melting down. Like, Sandra Bullock's like, you gotta calm down, you gotta calm down. Like, and he turns around to talk to the group, and she, like, reaches down and, like, holds his hand. I had never noticed that in my, like, zillion times watching it.
It's
And
so
so,
sweet. Yeah.
yeah, so it's, like, this little tiny, like, things that they all sort of add to the action, I think, is just all these little tiny character moments that really just make it so just
Yeah.
fantastic, a fantastic action film.
Yeah, these flickers of human emotion and looking out for each other, how the people do on the bus. We watched it in the first film class I ever took, intro to film in college, in the sound unit. We were supposed to do Amadeus, but we were watching it in my music class, and enough people were also in that class, and he's like, okay, fine. And he just said, we're doing Speed. He'd gone to AFI, and I think at first people were like, what? But what was bananas is some of the people had not seen Speed. And it was, just unbelievable. I mean, this was only a year or two. It was, that class was in 97. So it was just unbelievable to me. Like, how did you guys miss Speed? But yeah, so this is a film. I mean, it was so huge. It was, I mean, this movie just put Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves on a different planet, basically, of fame. And, cause they'd both been working actors for years, but, and I love their relationship. They've been in some stuff together that hasn't been that great, but their friendship has lived on.
And they both were like crushing on each other too,
Well,
which
how
I
would you
recall.
not? Yeah.
I know. It's so funny to learn that, like, after. And he remembers, like, at the Q&A after, like, he remembers so much about the filming. Like, it's kind of astounding that he can recall, like, he was like, oh, there were lights up here on the bus and right down by Sandra Bullock's leg, underneath the steering wheel. And she was like, I don't remember any of this. It's so funny how, like, they all sort of played together really well on stage.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes. So they still have like some really cute chemistry together.
That's so good. Yes, I love this movie. Other, we talked about you were going to choose Clueless. There's a million movies that we could have covered,
Oh my
but
gosh, so
do you
many.
have
Like, there's so
any,
many quintessential LA movies that.
like any that you like to watch with people who've never been there, like this, and then take them places, anything
That's
you
a
want to,
good question. I don't know that there's any that I'm like, oh, you got to see this, and feels like LA. I mean, Drive is a big one. I mean, that's not
Exactly.
everybody's cup of tea, but I
Oh, I
love
love it.
Drive. Like, I love that, To Live and Die in LA, like you had mentioned
Yeah, of
before.
course.
I mean, that's a great one. Like, the
Yes.
car chase alone, my God.
I know.
But to get a real sense of the city, like, I mean, more of an underbelly Heat, Collateral, like those Michael Mann, like as a double, like those are all really good. I'm sure there are probably like a
A
million other
million,
like older films. Like, there's one on the tip of my tongue that I can't think of that's more like Glendale, like old school Glendale. Why am I blanking on this? And they redid it with Kate Winslet and Guy Pearce for HBO that Todd Haynes did.
Mildred
Based on the
Pierce.
John Cain, James Cain book.
Mildred Pierce?
Mildred Pierce. God damn it. Mildred Pierce, the old one. I would recommend that for like if you like old how Glendale used to look before like everybody came in and started like changing all the houses and stuff. Like, it is a trip. And like a lot of the stuff hadn't been built yet either. So it's sort of fun to watch like really old films and see like when they do location shoot on location or whatever, where they do exterior shots to see what the town used to look like, is pretty interesting too. But I'm sure there's probably like 1,000 noirs. Like, when we were coming up, because we were trying to get a LAFCA series going for LA Film Critics going for at the Egyptian, we came up with a list of, I think it was 3,500 movies that were shot in LA that have LA exteriors. And it was just insane the amount of films where I was like, I haven't even seen like a third of these movies. Like, what is wrong with me?
There's so many.
There are so many. There are so many to dive into.
Well,
And
that's the
some of the ones
wonderful
I mentioned,
thing about movies.
I mean, hello,
You
like,
always find stuff.
yeah. And that was when it was like glorious where films were shot here and, could afford to be shot here. So
We hope
that's
that
really,
they do that again.
I hope so. I hope they can get that going. And like, so a lot of people's livelihoods are here and on the line and get going. So
Absolutely. Well, Courtney, I want to thank you so much for doing this. It's always such a pleasure to talk about anything with you, but especially movies and LA.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I hope I sounded eloquent enough, but
Oh, of course.
those are my favorites. I think people have either seen them or will enjoy them if they want to get sort of a flavor of LA, either funny or more of a gripping kind of
Yeah.
got your bases covered, I think.
Absolutely. Well, I am so happy to have one of my dearest friends, who I think is one of the best short story writers working today, Nikki Dolson. If you haven't read one of her short stories, you're missing out. She's especially great at crafting just like endings you don't forget. And they're crime stories, but they're also stories of the heart and stories of women. So Nikki is tremendous. And thanks so much for being here, my friend. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm good. I'm good. And you do look lovely today. I'm sorry, your bangs are always on point, and I love your bangs.
You too. My goodness. They're going to listen and be like, we missed the most glamorous women ever. And they did. So,
They did. They don't understand.
Yes. So, when I was originally going to do this, I pitched just all of my friends to come up with LA movies that they wanted to tackle. And we were going to have two besties together today, our good friend S.A. Cosby and Nikki Dolson, who are besties and just like the coolest double act. Unfortunately, our buddy Sean, he is tremendously busy. He's amazingly popular, so prolific. So we missed out on him this time, but I know he'll be back on the show very soon. So Sean,
Definitely.
we love you and come on back sometime.
We love you, Betsy. Yes. It's so funny when you had mentioned that we'd never both been on at the same time. I went, how is that possible? But it's
I
true. We've never
know.
been on together.
Yeah, I had the two Seans on together. I've had other group episodes, but yeah, we definitely need a Nikki and Sean episode. So you guys got to come up with something great, and I know you will. But I was
Absolutely.
excited when I asked and you suggested To Live and Die in LA, like, has anyone chosen it? And nobody had. And my thinking is maybe they just thought like everyone would choose that right away. The LA Times made a list of like the best LA movies in 2007 or 2008. This was like near the top. So it is obviously with the title, of course, and Wang Chung and the beautiful, sunsets captured by Robbie Mueller. Or Robbie Mueller. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce his name, but the cinematographer who's just amazing. It's, one of my favorite LA movies. And so I was very excited that you wanted to see it. It's pretty new to you, right?
It's very new to me. I only saw it for the first time last year. And I'm a big William Peterson fan.
Oh, yeah.
But I had never seen this movie. Like I had heard about, I mean, everybody's heard about it. Like it's a cultural moment. I feel like it's become, but I'd never seen it. And then, I think it was, what is that company? Kino Lorber. What there, the movie was on sale. And
Yes.
Travis Woods was on, had tweeted about it. And he's like, whatever you do, you got to get this movie. And I'm like, well, I trust Travis. So we bought the movie. And it was an entire experience. I think I was texting you about it or something like that. And it was just an amazing moment. And I was like, how have I missed this? But, it's
Yeah.
always the right time to watch it.
Oh,
It is
yeah.
just, it was great. It was great. I mean,
Absolutely. I can't remember if I had seen it before, like in the 90s or something like that, and just like only remembered, or maybe remembered just little portions of it that I'd seen on shows over the years. But I wrote a review of it when it came out on 20th Century Fox. MGM put out a disc forever ago that's way out of print by now. And I don't even know where it is. It's somewhere in my house. I have too many movies like all over the place. And I wrote a thing, and then William Friedkin followed me right away. And that made me very And I was super intimidated because he does not suffer fools. He finds critics' phone numbers. He calls them at home and yells at them. I mean,
Oh my
he
gosh.
was notorious for that. He actually called Travis and they had a wonderful conversation.
Okay, good.
You'll have to hear that story sometime. That's an off-the-air story, but it's marvelous. But,
That's awesome.
you know, he shared my piece. He shared, I think, one of my friends, Courtney's piece, I think on a different movie. She was pointing out he really kind of made a point to share a lot of female critics' pieces, which I thought was very cool. Kind of, yeah. So that was very, it made me proud to think like, oh, he approved of what I said about his movie. But it was still, it was, I was new to it. I was naive. And eventually, over the years, it became one of my favorites, one of my favorite LA movies, one of my favorite Friedkins, the one I watched the most, along with like Sorcerer, which I love. But yeah, so I was really excited to tackle it again. I saw it in LA in August with Courtney Howard, and there were some hipsters in the audience that had never seen the movie and treated it like a comedy. So William Peterson poses a lot and he's got this bravado and swagger, but he's supposed to. That's his thing.
Yes, that's absolutely what it is. I mean, he is coasting on his good looks, whatever the charm that hides that not a, he's not a great guy, but he's coasting on
No.
them looks and them bow legs. Like,
Yeah.
that is what he's getting by on, and it's just it's an excellent role for him. And
Yeah.
it's just I know it's early William Peterson, but my goodness. It's really spectacular. I enjoyed every second of him on the screen.
Me too. I mean, it's crackling. He comes to life, just right away. I guess he only had to read. He was like filming in Canada and he came down to read for it. He read like half a page only, and Friedkin said, "You have the part." And he actually was the one, another Chicago actor, because you can hear the Chicago whenever he talks, as Nikki and I, who spent a little time in Chicago, know. John Pankow, who plays Vukovich, who's amazing, was
Vukovic, yes.
actually a friend of his, a fellow Chicago actor. He introduced him to Friedkin the day after he got the part. Friedkin's like, "Yep, you're hired." So I think it needs that dynamic between the two of them. They're so good.
They're so good. It was just, it's not, I think, I don't even know what I thought was gonna happen, really. I really went in blind, but I was like, okay, it's these two. Honestly, it was two cops doing something, and that was it. I'm like, okay, we're gonna watch it to LA, it's whatever. And then, you get the first combination, the first team of his partner. I'm drawing a blank. Hart is his name.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
Yeah,
Hart.
it's Heart and
It's Chance and
Chance,
Hart.
which I love.
Yes.
Yeah.
The old cop who kind of, or who mentored him, and then but he's
Gonna
getting out, he's
retire. Yeah.
blasting. Yeah, and you think it's gonna be like that thing, and then it's when you get the scene of them being a good team, and
Yeah.
you really think it's gonna be the two of them through that movie, and then not only does he's like, okay, I'm gonna go do this one last thing, and he's like, you gotta take me with you. This is how we work. This is, projecting a, I'm a good agent, because they are federal
Yes.
agents, not
Yeah,
cops.
yeah.
But he's very much, that's how we do these things,
Exactly.
which I, you get the, it implies that he's, or at least for me, it was that he's more by the book, that more of a by a book agent than he actually turns out to be. But he
Yes.
does whatever's necessary, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And then
Yeah, Chance
after,
takes chances. I mean, he's taking a chance, but he's
yes.
trying to be more, I think, responsible about stuff. Yeah.
Yes. And Hart is like he's walking in those steps, because that's what his partner is. His
Yep.
partner does these things. He doesn't really step out, or they step out together. And so, I mean, for the, I think the stereotype now is that, the loner cop who doesn't want a partner, right?
Yeah.
That was very much not them. And that was kind of cool to see too.
Yeah. And then after, I mean, spoiler alert, of course, Hart gets killed,
So many
and then
spoilers,
he gets Vukovich with him. Then he becomes the Hart to Vukovich. And so I was kind of comparing it to like Narcissus and Echo, because boy, does Vukovich really want to, just please him and parrot him and be his mirror, essentially, as the film goes on. They even start dressing alike and the sunglasses, and you see guys do that, like sometimes it's almost like a male crush sort of thing, just like women go shopping together, they sometimes will combine and figure out which outfits. Guys kind of do that too on a different level.
For
Well,
sure.
he has this car, I want this car, or exactly. And so I love their dynamic. He's pushing back against him as it continues, because Chance is an asshole, and he stands and with a leg up. I mean, it's like almost animalistic. And also, this movie, just the casting is so fabulous. Some people before they became huge stars, Willem Dafoe had been in a few things, like Streets of Fire and The Loveless, but this was before Mississippi Burning and before Platoon. So he's a
So
great,
young.
so young, so gorgeous, great villain. Jane Leaves, who is Daphne Moon on Frasier, has a tiny role in this movie. John Turturro has a tiny role. So yeah.
Yes. I mean, like John Turturro, like I was like, who is that? My God, that's John
Yes,
Turturro.
I love
It
him.
truly, until he says something, I did not know who that was.
Yeah.
Like I was like, he looks familiar, but until I was like, oh my God, ow. Oh,
Yes.
it's crazy. The dynamic between Vukovic and Chance, like you were saying, that Vukovic really wants to impress him, and they together do this good job. Like, so I guess I don't know how federal agents work, so they don't have partners because he doesn't have one, right? You don't see that early on. You see Vukovic running around when they find Hart's body in the background. He's looking around somewhere else.
Yeah, I wonder if he was like in need of one. Who knows? Maybe he was transferred to the op. We don't know. Yeah.
And he's like, yep, well, you're going to get paired with this guy now. And he's like, okay, fine, whatever.
Yeah.
But the truly that moment when he like Chance opens up the garbage can or trash can to see, and you don't see anything. You see the
Yeah,
blind guy
yeah.
and you know what's happened because you've seen that. But like his face is just
Oh.
everything in that moment for me. And I'm like, okay, this can be, yeah, I'm in, I'm in, I'm in.
Yeah,
But it's
you're
like none of
invested.
this, yeah. But none of this prepares you for how the movie ends, like leading up
I
to that end.
know.
Like the, not even, it's like a complete like left turn from the, and they're like, we're gonna go do this now. And I'm like, what
Wait, what?
the
Yeah,
hell?
it's like we will do anything to get this guy now. It's like doesn't have to be by the book. We're gonna go stage a heist, essentially. And which I love the many, many ways it goes wrong, and those famous last words of like, oh, if it's bad, we'll just walk away. Like, it starts kind of okay and then gets bad, gets worse, gets horrible. Like, and then the kicker I did not see coming, some of the reveals that came out about that were just fabulous. He's basically showing, kind of like he did with French Connection, how thin the line is between cop and criminal. And I do like that essentially, we watch Defoe make funny money, which is like, why is that so erotic? I don't know. It's so sexy. Like, that whole clip is on YouTube, and you watch it and you're like, I'm weirdly turned on. I don't know. Like, do I want to make counterfeit money? Do I want Willem Dafoe? Do I want to like paint? I don't know. But it's weirdly hot. But then after that, they have to show how bad Defoe is, because he looks too fucking cool, and you kind of just want to be hanging out in that room watching him make funny money, and maybe getting it on. I don't know, but you want to be in the room, so they have to show you how bad Defoe is. But then they also need to show you, so you don't get too invested in William Peterson's, you got to see how bad he can be too. And his interactions with his CI are just appalling.
Deeply, deeply appalling. Yes, and he's just, and you think the entire time Vukovic is this good guy. Vukovic is not, like, he's, I mean, he's making bad choices, clearly. Right down to who goes to the lawyer of the guy you're trying to kill or arrest?
The
Who goes
dumbest mofo ever, right? I'm gonna have the same lawyer of the guy that we ripped off and we're trying to like catch. Dean
Like, you
Stockwell is
know.
totally going to that guy. Come on.
Yeah, he's gonna light a cigarette and be like, okay, look, so and so came to my office today. Like, why wouldn't you?
This
You pay a lot of
dumb
money, you
mofo,
benefit.
basically, like, can you
Oh my
imagine him
God.
laughing? I mean, he's like, yeah,
So
technically I'm not
crazy.
supposed to say anything because I'm a lawyer, but let's say his name rhymes with Ukovich or whatever. Like, you know, you could just like imagine how it would play out. He's doing charades.
Yeah. Jan Ukovic. There you go. Oh my gosh, the choices he made, like, they all made just terrible
Don.
choices. But even at least in that moment, he's like, "Let me save my own ass. Can my ass be saved here? Can I fix this enough to have it?" And when he's getting told, you'll have to do 7 years, but you won't have to actually do all of it. You'll get out in a year and a half." And I'm like, how does he not, like, swoon and fall down? Because that's his life. He's done. He's never going to be anything again. I mean, how much are we spoiling? Are we
We're at this point, if you're listening,
just
keep fast forwarding a bit, but go for it, Nikki. Spoiler. We just
But
spoiler alert.
yeah, because I mean,
It's on Prime. It's rarely streaming because I think the music
yes.
rights, also the MGM of it all, kind of fell through the cracks of rights holding.
Oh, that, and that is where I saw it again. And for somebody who, like, I love to rewatch movies, but usually I'm like, okay, I can watch it and watch do something else completely, just riveted.
You get sucked
They
right in.
completely, I'm like, I know all the beats because I've seen it. I've seen it, and you that moment when, like, did you gasp when William Peterson dies? Did you
Yes,
gasp?
I did
Girl.
not see that coming. I was like, holy cow, that just happened. And it's like, okay, now we're gonna follow Vukovic. And then I was kind of like, I remember when I showed it to my mom, and after he died, well, he was an asshole anyway. It's like, yeah, he was. And we immediately think, God, now she is free. No.
No, because that's the thing that pushes Vukovic to one side or the other, and it pushes him. He's like, I've lost my partner. This is what you do. This,
I'm gonna
he
work the
becomes,
CI. She'll probably get
he
killed in
doesn't,
2 weeks.
yeah, and he doesn't care anymore. He's become chance. That is it. Like, at the end of it, you see him driving his truck. You see him going to her, like, complete absorption in it. Like, he's no longer himself anymore. It is crazy. Totally bought it. Loved it.
He doesn't become a butterfly in the end. He becomes like, a slithering snake, essentially. I
Oh,
know.
it
And
is
the
crazy.
music and the,
The music.
amazing.
Classic 80s. Just,
I have the
it's just,
record.
do you really? Oh, I have to get it. I have to get it. It's
It's
so
good in the
excellent.
morning, like if you need to wake up, you're like, I don't want to go to work today. You put that on and you're just all of a sudden like, nope, I'm taking the 10, I'm going to LA, and like I'm gonna make some funny money, get
There you
weirdly
go.
hot by watching Dafoe make funny money. I don't know. This
Yeah.
movie actually caused a federal investigation into that counterfeiting scene because Friedkin had real life people who'd done time who were counterfeiters doing those scenes when Defoe's off camera, even though Defoe did learn how to do that. And Gerard or Gerald Petovich, the guy who wrote the
Yeah, the
book,
guy wrote a book.
yes, had been a Secret Service agent, and they were mad that
Oh.
he was, writing this thing and making this movie. And so a rival of his initiated the investigation into this, later resigned. Actually interviewed Friedkin, and Friedkin offered to show it to the Treasury Department, like, hey, if you want me to take out a couple frames or do something, like, let me know. Never got followed up after that, and the guy resigned. So I think it was like, this
Oh,
is
wow.
ridiculous. It's a movie, you guys. It is based enough in real things. And there was a little bit of a scandal because they made over $1 million to use for this movie with three flaws, so that way it wouldn't circulate. But somehow it leaked out to the son of a crew member who tried to buy candy at a store with it. And yeah, got busted.
Dude, what?
What is
Oh my God.
going on? Yeah.
Oh, crazy.
Yes.
The 80s, man.
I know,
The
movies were brought to you by cocaine, essentially. Yes.
Yes. You know,
Cocaine and too much testosterone. Oh, and it's back. No, now it's ketamine and testosterone,
Yeah, but it's a
right?
very different mix. My
It
goodness.
is.
I
Yeah.
don't know. Can we go back to the cocaine? 'Cause I
Yeah.
feel like it's a
Let's
different freaking
go
movie.
back to the
Oh my
80s.
God.
Yeah. Oh
Yes.
my God.
Oh.
And oh my goodness, the coolest car chase ever.
Amazing. Just the whole, I mean, like I said, when they take that left turn in the plot and you're like
Yeah.
this random thing that got mentioned, and then they're like, okay, so we need money, so we need to be the bad guys and commit crimes. That's how we're gonna get some money. It'll all work out, and it fucking doesn't work out. It's
Not at
so
all.
spectacularly bad. And that poor man who dies with his pants around his ankles, it's the worst
Oh my
thing
God,
ever.
the worst thing
Oh.
ever. When he, yeah, especially again, spoiler, when we learn he was a Fed, and it's just like, so he's one of them that they get killed. And it's great when it's like, oh, there's a Chevy, no, another Chevy. And it's fabulous too, because I guess Friedkin, driving home in the early 60s, had fallen asleep at the wheel and woke up going the wrong way down a road and like pulled over, collected himself, and then has spent the next 20 years trying to figure out, where am I going to use this and how? So going the wrong way down highway, yeah, it's brilliant. I guess Peterson did a lot of his own driving, and so Pankow's reactions were very authentic, like, holy shit, what are we doing? Yeah, so amazing car chase. I saw this again the same week I rewatched Ronin for a friend Blake Howard's podcast. And, watching the car chases in there, wrong ways down highways. We actually did things in films back then. We didn't just like
We
put
did.
an actor in front of, it's not green screen. They shut down the freeway in LA for 4 hours on the weekend, like Saturday and Sunday at off hours, in order to get this done. And that's like, that would never happen now. No.
No, no.
BLCGI. Yeah.
Yeah. Green screen, somebody jostling in the car. Yeah, but no, it's spectacular. When
With
they
the
go under the
steering wheel that makes no sense how they're driving. You're like, nobody
Yes.
drives like that.
Yeah, the background is dead straight and they're like, ah, yeah.
They're like making turns. Yeah. Or
Ah,
when they
so
look
much
at
for
the person they're with the whole time and you're like, how are
Yes.
you driving right now? Yeah.
Never glance back. We just, oh, what are you doing? And then it's like 5 minutes of monologue.
Yeah, and it feels like with Friedkin, he's like, you guys liked the car chase in French Connection. You liked all the truck stuff in Sorcerer. Well, check this shit out. And then he just like took it and topped it. Yeah.
Yes, and put them in the filthiest car I have ever seen on television.
Pretty
But did
much.
you like the tan car was like literal like dirt across the dashboard when he's driving, and I'm like, dude, wash your hand after you got out because it was so gross.
I
Y'all are the
know.
good guys, you know?
Yeah.
Like, your car is so gross. That is not blending in. Everybody is going to notice that car. That
Yeah.
is not blending in. And they do.
I
The car
know.
gets clocked.
Yeah. Guys, you're making stupid decisions here. Yes.
So many bad choices. So many.
Yeah.
Delightful. Just the best movie experience I've had in a while. It's an amazing slice of LA in the background of all these scenes.
It is.
You know, when he goes to the CI's house and he's like, what would you do if I didn't give you any more information?
Yeah.
You know, and there's this shot behind her and you see like the red water tower
yes.
and like the green of a bridge and the highways behind her. And it's just like this, you know, a thing I've seen, you know, a dozen times easily, you know, it's, you know, paint it, you know, color it all dark and throw some like soot or fog over it in the
yes.
Blade Runner still, you know, it's that classic LA that I for me, I've probably taken for granted as, okay, that's what LA looks like. And then you move on with the story and you're not, but like, I'm watching the background of this. You can't help but like,
no,
be
you're
in
right.
What's going on around it. And, it's
and
just,
the
it's just this
neon
perfect thing.
Reflections and yes.
It's
Oh,
so great. So
so
great.
good.
Oh gosh.
Yes.
I was just like,
Nikki,
how
should
did
we
I
watch
never
it
watch this
again?
before?
No, I'm just kidding.
Yes. Followed by
Oh.
Sorcerer. Okay. Like,
Yes.
I saw Sorcerer first and I'm like, this is Friedkin. Let me get into this. Which is
Yeah.
then, you know, then To Live and Die. Yeah. I have to like do the whole thing. Yes.
Yeah, it bothers me that
Really
he
excellent.
considers Sorcerer such a failure because it didn't do well. Luckily, with
Oh.
this movie, he has said later in his career, even though it did not do that great, that To Live and Die in L.A. is one of his favorite films he ever made. So that at least he
So
knew
great.
before he passed
Yeah.
on. Yeah, so I'm glad we got to honor
Excellent.
it. My goodness, this was so much fun,
Yes.
Nikki.
Oh, it's so much fun. Thank you for
Yes.
having me.
We're going to bring you and Sean back, come up with an idea. Maybe we'll do something Blade Runner related so we can keep this LA
Oh.
vibe going. 80s.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I love
Yeah.
Blade Runner. I'm absolutely down. We'll get
Okay.
everybody on. It'll be great.
Yes, we're doing it. All right. Thank you
Yes.
so much.
Thank you.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as a dollar per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more, by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching.
This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.